Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this next edition of the Filibuster on the Senate Floor. We're back, Lee, because neither of us were on for our last filibuster, which was quite amazing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I was shocked to, obviously, we had lives, unlike Tristan and John, and had to take a week off. And, it didn't go unnoticed by me that these two Americans kicked me off my own show and started talking about how great America was at the expense of kicking the Brits out. The irony was not lost on me, boys. It was not lost at all.
Well, it was Independence Day weekend, so what can you do?
Exactly. I'm surprised I didn't get, kicked out myself and going, yeah, the reason we're so great as opposed to Lee, but, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it is good to be back, and we're excited to be back because this week is the lead-up to the release of the new Star Trek film, Star Trek Beyond. It's been a bumpy road getting here in terms of fan reaction, but so far, so good. I mean, it's had its premieres, a couple of premieres already. It was premiered in Sydney a couple weeks back, and then last week in London, and I believe it's going to be shown tomorrow in New York. And they've already had a few press screenings, and contrary to what a lot of people thought, I think, so far, so good. With 27 reviews in, it's sitting at an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is relatively high for most Star Trek films. Hopefully it stays that way. We'll see as more reviews come in, but so far so good.
Yeah,
so,
if it sticks up that, if it keeps going that way, then I'm going to get to be able to give a big fat I told you so to anyone that doubted me when I said Justin Lin would deliver a great Star Trek movie. So I'm really hoping it's as good, because my hubris will be unstoppable if I'm proven right, which I will be.
And yeah, I think you will be. I hope, I genuinely hope you will be. And you know what, listeners, you don't know Lee like I do. When he's right about something and he's been predicting to be right about something, the ego grows so massive. It's like Earth can barely contain it. But on this one topic, I would like him to be right.
Yeah, I'll come strutting out the cinema on like 3 a.m. on Friday morning, just like putting on a pair of black shades and just strutting down the street, just pointing at everyone going, told you.
Well, this is kind of bizarre, too, because, like, this is one of the few films that you're not getting before us. We're all getting it at the same time.
I know, it's so unfair, isn't it? Like, I don't get to be a superior Brit for once, so, yeah, I have to make do with sharing with others, which has never been my forte.
Yeah, well, but so far, so good, so hopefully the good things continue about this film. But because we are building up to the release of Star Trek Beyond, we're going to take a look back at the previous two Kelvin timeline movies, that being Star Trek 2009 and the much divisive Star Trek Into Darkness.
Good to see you're on brand loyalty there. We're getting it correct, the Kelvin timeline.
Yes, well, I mean, that is the new PC term we're supposed to use, right? And I kind of like that better than Abrams verse.
Yes, yeah, it was kind of a bit unexpected when it came out, like, oh, it's the Kelvin timeline. I was like, yeah, that's fine. So I wonder if people will actually use it, or they'll just go, nah, I'm quite happy with the JJ timeline. You know what us geeks are like when we're stuck in our ways.
Yeah, that's true. But, it makes sense. Kelvin was the divergent point, yeah. So... But let's talk about the previous two movies, and let's go back all the way to, I guess our story starts awfully in 2005. Enterprise goes off the air, mm-hmm. And we're left without new Star Trek for the first time in what was then 18 years.
Yeah, I remember that day well, actually. I was born in 1987, so I was born into the next generation. So I had all through my life always had Star Trek on, for what it was always on somewhere while I was a kid. And then I remembered I was out having a walk in the woods with one of my friends, and I'd found out about the news. And I was like, oh my God, there's not going to be any Star Trek on while I'm, alive. It was quite a weird feeling to get, thinking like it's an end of a relationship almost. It's something that's been with me since my birth almost.
Right, and it was kind of a period of decline as far as Star Trek was concerned, because Enterprise had gone off the air. It was the first show since the original series to get canceled at mid-run. And of course, you know, a few years before that, Nemesis had come out and done nothing at the box office. So we knew we weren't going to get any more TNG films. So it was really uncertain back then. And I remember thinking, you know, how bizarre it was, kind of like you, how bizarre it was that there was going to be no new Star Trek. And, you know, looking at it now, 11 years later, which is hard to believe, you know, it's shocking how much I think we took having Star Trek for granted, and now having like 11 years of no consistent Star Trek.
Yeah, for sure. Because and I think it was something that we kind of always hoped, like it's kind of like when you're hooked on like a drug or coffee or something like that, that you just keep wanting that fix. And to get like Star Trek every year, something to look forward to in the summer, new episodes and a new DVD. And I think Star Trek should have had a break much sooner. It should have had a break between Voyager and Enterprise. And I think they made that mistake rushing into the two, one after another. Because it's only natural that if we work and work and work and very little time for an actual break, then, you know, we're not going to be at our best. We're not going to be our sharpest. That you sometimes need that break to go away, come back full of enthusiasm, refreshed and with new ideas. And I think that was missing from Star Trek for quite a long time.
Or at least a changing of the guard, right? Yeah. Because the same people had been in place for 18 years. And that had started to change because, I mean, I don't know what your feelings are on Enterprise as a whole, but I felt that they did change the guard in the fourth season. They brought in new people to start writing shows. And for me, it got really good that fourth season. Like, if the fourth season had been the second season, I don't think it would have been canceled.
Like, I would go further for me of seeing season three, that season one and two of Enterprise, while there was some good episodes here and there, was pretty poor. It was an even more diluted version of Voyager, as far as I was concerned. And then with season three, with Rick and Brannon taking a step back, and people like Manny Coto getting involved, and a lot of the different writers taking on kind of a lot more responsibility, we really started to see a bit of diminishing returns from Brannon Braga. So then when we went into season four and Manny Coto was giving it full time, I mean, I really enjoyed season four, last episode excluded really, but I think it was a fantastic series, and it showed what could have been if they'd maybe made that decision like straight out the gate to change the guard.
Right, but what it did show, in bringing us back on topic, is that if you change the guard, good things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as Enterprise goes off the air, we have no idea what's next for Star Trek, because, you know, the movie front and the TV front are suddenly silent. Then I think it was either at the end of 2005 or it was at sometime in 2006, I think, when this idea started to be floating around that there was going to be a new Star Trek movie and that it was going to be Kirk and Spock again. And they were going to reboot, although we didn't have the term reboot at the time, I don't think. They were going to reboot the franchise in movie form with the original series characters. And I can't remember exactly what my thought was at the time. Because I was in 2006, that would have made me 17. So I think I remember thinking, though, that I was apprehensive. I think maybe we all were to a certain extent, because it's like, how do you reimagine an icon like the original series? It's such a part of its time, and by 2006, it's so classic that I don't know how a reinvention of that series is going to work on a big screen format. What were your thoughts when this idea started to be floated around?
Yeah, like, I was the same as you. I can't really pinpoint what my initial reaction was to the news. That I was about 19 at the time, and I think I was a bit more interested in like going out with my friends while studying, and like focused on education and drinking and chasing girls, all that kind of things. Like, Star Trek almost took a little step to the side, really, at that kind of time.
You had a life, I didn't.
I tried to think I had a life at the time, but I would still watch Star Trek hungover in bed on a Sunday, and I really liked it. But the one thing that I always remember was that I think I was a bit more, I was kind of open to it, because I'd actually spoke about the subject a few years earlier. I remember back on the old Trek BBS boards, I I put up a thread where I was like, oh, if they made like Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation, like remade it today, who do you think they should, who would they have cast? And I remembered like making a list of actors and suggestions about that. So it was always something in my head that I kind of thought, well, it's kind of, it kind of happens, because that kind of period of the mid-noughties was kind of a bit focused on reboots, was focused on perhaps recasting people. So I think it was something that was already in my head and kind of expected to happen, so it didn't really bother me as much. Perhaps now I'd be a bit more, but at that kind of time I was in maybe the right mindset where I wasn't just like being hardcore about it. I was pretty cool about it.
Right. I think certainly by the end of 2006, it had been announced that that was going to be the case of what the new movie was going to be. And I think by that time, they had already announced that J.J. Abrams was going to direct. Now, back in the day, I didn't know J.J. Abrams from Adam because I didn't watch Felicity or Alias or Lost, which was the big show at the time. Were you familiar at all with his work when they announced him?
Yeah, I was part of the church of J.J. Abrams at the time. I had seen Mission Impossible 3, which, well, I think is flawed. There was a lot I really liked about it. And, yeah, I was big into that. And with Lost, I'd watched the first season when it first came out. And then just with, like, living away from home and student halls, I didn't really have the ability to catch it, keep up with, like, TV programs or download them or things like that. So I remembered, like, I think it was like a month or 2 months before the final episode. I was like, right, I really got to just watch them all so that the ending isn't spoiled. So if I decide to watch in like 2 years, I won't know how, that I'll know how Lost ends before I really started it. So I think for like a month, like, this proves that I didn't actually have a life in my my early 20s. I just watched Lost intense for a month. That I'd go to work, come home, watch episodes, go back to work, watch episodes. I really got myself jacked up on it. And I think the pilot by J.J. Abrams is one of the finest hours of TV in terms of a professional job. And, you know, he really started something pretty special in the episode. Whether it went on to be a success or not, like, no one can deny how incredible the pilot was.
I don't know if you could say you didn't have a life because you watched those shows, because I think everybody was watching those shows back in the mid-2000s. That was the biggest hit.
I think it was more just the fact that I was watching, like, seven episodes a night. I just had to get through, like, 5.5 seasons worth in, like, a space of a few weeks. So there was very little time for anything but work and Lost. I always remember I'd even go around to my girlfriend's house and I'd bring, like, Lost DVDs to her house, and she probably wanted to spend some time together. I was like, well, really, I need to be watching episodes 17, 18, 19, and 20 of Lost tonight. So we'd sit down and watch that, and I could just imagine her, like, eyes rolling as I was just sitting there watching, like, a program that would have been, like, foreign language to someone at that point.
Right. But, so I remember him being announced as the director, and because I didn't know, wasn't familiar with his work, it didn't sway me one way or the other. When this film started to get on my radar, and it was always, you know, I was always going to see it because I'm a Star Trek fan. But when I started to really pay attention to it was, I believe it was at Comic-Con 2007 when they started making the first casting announcements. And I think one of the first people I remember being cast was Zachary Quinto.
Yes.
As Spock. And even though I wasn't watching Heroes at the time, that was what he was mostly known for. But I remember seeing the picture of him, and I remember thinking to myself, he looks a lot like a young Leonard Nimoy. Just there's something about his face that looks the part. And I thought, well, that's very interesting. And then at that same Comic-Con, they announced that Leonard Nimoy was going to be in the film as Spock. I know it was at the same Comic-Con because I remember the image of them two sitting together.
Yes.
And that's when I really started to pay attention to the quality of the film, because I don't know if you've read any of Leonard Nimoy's autobiographies, but no. I have. And in particular, his autobiography that came out in the mid-90s, I Am Spock, it talks mostly about his time on Star Trek. And the impression that I got from him in reading that autobiography is that he's very, very, not only very protective of his character, but he's also very particular about what kind of projects, Star Trek projects, he wants to involve himself in. And he's never been shy about saying when something is crap or not up to his standards, because, I mean, in that book he talks about how he felt dissatisfied making the motion picture, and, you know, he's actually turned down projects because he didn't feel that they were creatively up to snuff. So in reading that, I knew that if he had agreed to be in this movie, then there was something that spoke to the potential quality, because he wouldn't just do it for no reason.
It's such a shame that for our listeners that podcast is just an audio experience, because of while listening to you talking about Leonard Nimoy being very picky about what projects he does and turning down projects, right behind Matt Hansen is a Star Trek Generations poster where Leonard Nimoy said, "No thanks, I don't want to be in that movie."
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, that's kind of what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
But, you know, but even like in the stuff he was in, like when he talks about the experience of making Five, how frustrating that was for him. Mm-hmm.
Especially when you think of the involvement he had in 3 and 4, really, with writing, producing, directing, to really take like a step back for Five before really getting back involved again in a producing and writing capacity for 6. Yeah, I certainly don't blame him for having that frustration with Five that I'm pretty sure every sane Star Trek fan on the planet has with that film. Sorry to John Mills there.
Right. So that was the first casting announcements that were made, and I really started to pay attention. And then the subsequent casting announcements all came out. And I don't know what I thought about them at that time, but looking back on it, I kind of like the fact that every one of the casting, they were people that I had seen in other things before, but they weren't names yet.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, the biggest names was, I obviously knew Zachary Quinto from Heroes. I watched one or two episodes, but I was familiar with him, and I was totally sold on the casting. Really, you know, from the main cast, I didn't really know any of them. I knew John Chow from American Pie. And
right, that's where we all knew him.
Yeah, and I knew Simon Pegg, obviously, from, you know, he was someone I loved prior to Star Trek, from Spaced and Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz. So I was really excited by the casting for him. So yeah, those were the ones that really stood out as people I knew. But it was one of those ones that they just looked right, that I got a really good early impression from these characters. And I was so excited to see them do the performance, really.
Right, and so all this casting announcements were made. Then we flash forward to 2008 when I think it was with Cloverfield that the first teaser came out, which is that famous teaser of the welding.
I love
the building
that
of
trailer.
The Enterprise, which was, you know, I got to say, except for, you know, with the possible exception of Star Trek Beyond, but even that, I like the Star Trek Beyond trailer. Mm-hmm. The teaser trailers for all J.J. Abrams films are fantastic.
Oh yeah,
they're all mysterious. They're all shrouded in secrecy, but they give you such a sense of ominousness. And I remember seeing that trailer, and it ends with, you know, the look at the Enterprise, and you hear Leonard Nimoy do the Space: The Final Frontier. And I remember thinking, wow, that actually got me really excited. I didn't see Cloverfield in theater, so I didn't get to see it on the big screen. But did you get to see it on the big screen? That teaser?
I can't remember. I did see Cloverfield at the cinema, but I don't think I did see that one on the big screen, because it's different really here in the UK. Like in America, you obviously get, like, companies will attach their own trailers to the film. So here in Britain, it's kind of more like a company really does them. So if you go and see a 15 movie, they give you trailers that are appropriate to that. So it's not really you don't go into Paramount Film thinking, oh, I'm going to get the Star Trek trailer. It's sometimes just a lucky draw, really, what you get.
And back then when that trailer came out, you remember this too. It was supposed to come out in Christmas 2008.
Uh-huh.
And then later that year, they pushed it to summer 2009, which seemed odd, because up to that point, really, ever since Five was the last film that in Star Trek that had come out in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
From 6 onward, they were all either Thanksgiving or Christmas time releases.
Yeah, it was always a bit later for us in the UK. I never really thought of Star Trek as like a Christmas treat or anything like that. It was always kind of like a February, March sort of experience.
But so it was pushed back a year later. And then, we get to 2009, and the film's going to come out. Other trailers have been released. It's looking spectacular.
Yeah.
And then the reviews hit.
I always remember the first time I was really properly like, I was fine with the project, like totally on board with it because I needed a Star Trek fix. But I remember being in America and hearing that Entertainment Weekly had like new pictures. And so I remember like going down to like a Barnes and Noble and opening like the magazine and just looking through these pictures. And I saw Kirk in the black jersey and Spock in the blue one, pictures of the Kelvin. And I was like, wow, this looks really good. It doesn't look cheap. That Star Trek films could at times look like it looked like it had a proper budget. It looked like it was proper film. It wasn't sort of a TV movie with a bit of a budget. So I remembered seeing those like pictures and being like totally on board with it.
Yeah, and then like I said, the reviews came out and the reviews were glowing. And I don't remember seeing reviews that enthusiastic for a Star Trek film in years. Maybe the last time it happened, maybe it was what, First Contact?
Yeah.
If that.
I mean, I always think like for me the Next Generation movies, really up until kind of Nemesis, I was never really aware of the critical response. That I had the internet, but it wasn't really something that I had on like my fingertips, was like the reviews of these movies. It was always kind of up to me when I went to see them, like, oh, I think this is good. But I would very rarely know if other fans liked them, didn't like them. So when like with the JJ movies, oh, sorry, the Kelvin movies, that was when I was more aware than ever, really. And I was a bit more with Nemesis at the time, but like aware of like critical response, fans responding around the world, like Twitter, Facebook really was kind of syncing up with bringing a community of fans together to share their thoughts, passions or dislikes of any kind of the footage or film itself.
Right. And but I just remember like in the weeks leading up to it, it was getting very, very good buzz, like amazingly good buzz. And so when I went to go see it, I was with a couple of friends of mine, and we went to go see it. And I remember thinking, because I went to go to the preview showing. We didn't have, like, but back then, day before showings were more rare, I think. They did midnights, but they didn't do, like, you know, how films these days start at, like, 7 p.m. At least they do here. Back then, that didn't happen so much, but they did do it for Star Trek. And so I remember going to see it with friends, a couple friends, the day before it was officially released. And I walked into the theater and I remember thinking, huh, it's not like the theater was packed, but I remember thinking there are a lot more people here than the theater I saw Nemesis in. So I was hoping that was a good sign. I mean, what was your experience when you saw, your theater experience when you saw 09 for the first time?
Yeah, I always remember it was a Friday morning and I went with my friend Kenny. Friend of the show, Kenny, and I went to see the show, and it was like a Friday morning because I was always off Fridays, and it was quite busy, which was like when I went to see Nemesis, it was closer to like a mass. It was, you know, next to no one there. There was not a good atmosphere really. With this, it was like, huh, and the fact that my friend wanted to come along, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, come along. And I remembered it was like a really good atmosphere, like there was a good crowd there for it. So that was always quite exciting to be there, really.
Yeah. And then I remember coming out of the theater and was just glowing. I was so happy. And I remember all of us went to a coffee shop because it was quite late at night at that point, but it was still open. And we just talked about the film for like the next 2 hours.
I was I remember, like, I always remember where I was. Like, I was walking up a hill. J.K. Rowling used to live there. I always remember that. I was walking up a hill, and I was having to explain the time travel elements to my friend Kenny. Just like, okay, so this is what's happened. So you've got this prime timeline, and then you've got this hole, which goes back here, and then, like, you've got countdown, and you've got all these different things, and just, like, breaking it down for a fan. And I couldn't believe it. This was, like, conversations I probably used to have with people on, like, Star Trek message boards and I was actually having them with a real life friend that wasn't interested in Star Trek. So like, that was pretty crazy.
But you know what was crazy about it, and we can talk about the film now as a whole, is that after we saw it, I had friends who either were not into Star Trek or weren't that familiar with Star Trek who all of a sudden after seeing this film were enthusiastic and asking me questions about what they should watch. And I never thought I would see that happen.
I know, it's so crazy when that happens, that you always think of, like, Star Trek and thinking, like, it's something that I had like one or two friends when I was growing up that liked Star Trek or would indulge Star Trek. But then when you've got like friends now that are like wanting to talk about it, and even if they've only seen a couple of the films and they only watched the Kelvin ones and want to talk about them, like that's still so exciting. Like, you know, it's like growing up, it was something you kept inside yourself. Like, he's opened it up to other people and that they want to talk about it, or they'll talk about it in their own different perspective. We'll talk about it as part of a grander thing, a part of the franchise where it belongs. They're just talking about it as if it's just a normal film, as if it is a Marvel film, as if it is a DC film. It's just, oh, it's a big blockbuster time. It's the new Star Trek movie. And that's still awesome. They don't need to watch any more. They can watch more. That's exciting.
It is exciting. And like I said, I never thought I would see the day. But J.J. Abrams managed to make Star Trek mainstream and cool again. And part of that, well, all of that is due to the film's quality, which we can talk about. We don't need to go through the plot or anything. Mm-hmm. But I think what was so amazing about that film for me, you know, the story was fun and it was a fun film, but I never realized, and of course, looking back on it now, you think, of course, this would be the most important thing, but I never realized how lucky and how much they struck gold with the cast.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're going to reboot Star Trek and you're going to reboot that original crew is so iconic, especially Shatner and Nimoy, that if they don't work, it's going to fall flat on its face. It's not going to be any good, no matter how good the surrounding story is. And I just remember walking away thinking that was probably some of the best casting I had seen in years. I wasn't dissatisfied with any of them.
Yeah, like, I think that's one of J.J. Abrams' like greatest strengths, is him being able to cast talent. He can pick it out of a crowd. Like, we've seen, it's not just like a one-off. He did it with, say, Lost. He did Lost, which was amazing casting. He found Jennifer Garner, which was amazing casting for Alias. And then you see it now with Star Wars Force Awakens. Like, no one knew who Daisy Ridley was, or and some of the other characters, to much lesser extent, were kind of known. But like, he picked them out and elevated them to the mainstream. Like, when I always think of J.J. Abrams as similar to Edgar Wright, that they've both got that youthful passion and they can always pick out amazing cast that you know that's a guarantee when you go see their films.
I mean, and I think, because I walked out of there loving all of the cast, but for some reason, and we all know what the reason is at this point, the one that I walked away truly impressed by, like really, really, really impressed by, was Carl Urban.
Yes.
As McCoy. Because I saw the moment that he walks on when Kirk is in the shuttle getting ready to go to Starfleet Academy, and you see him walk on and you hear him speak as McCoy for the first time, it's eerie how much he was able to nail DeForest Kelly's speech patterns and cadence.
Yeah. Like, he was probably one of the few that we all kind of knew as well, obviously from Lord of the Rings. And he's so good. He's like, I'm the fact that he's going to have a larger role into Star Trek Beyond has got me excited. That, like, I just love him. I love his infectious personality on and off the screen when he's involved in Star Trek. And I really think he's another one that they just struck gold. It was inspired casting. At first I thought, oh, that's interesting. But you kind of go with it. And then when you watch it on the big screen, you're like, brilliant, fantastic.
No, but I never thought, like, oh, you know, when I saw him, I didn't know who he was, but I was like, okay, well, we'll see what his take on McCoy is. And I severely underestimated how much he would be able to sound like DeForest Kelly. It was brilliant.
Yeah, like, that's, you know, one of the things that when you get these movies, you want to spend time with this crew. And, like, that was one of the problems that Star Trek had lost big time when before the JJ production team came on board, was like, you never felt like excited to spend a lot of time with these characters. That in like Nemesis and Insurrection, it was kind of like, you're kind of like, they were kind of old, not necessarily in a negative way, like these are older people, but like the characters were old and they'd kind of lost that spark behind their eyes.
Right, that's right. Because like when you watch Nemesis, I mean, one of the biggest problems I have with it, aside from the story, is that all of them look tired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, no one wants to be there, and everyone just seems kind of bored, and there's no sparkle, and, you know, whether that's poor script, poor direction, like, you just kind of locked in and went, ugh, if they don't want to be there, like, you kind of transmit that back to the audience. And I was kind of like, I don't really want to spend time with this crew. I mean, I'll watch you in, like, Next Generation show where you clearly are excited to be there with this. It's like, no. But with, like, the Kelvin timeline crew, you're like, I love these guys. I can't wait to spend time with Chekhov, Bones, Scotty, McCoy. Like, they're great people to be around. And I don't know if you've watched it on, like, it pops up on Twitter, a past year like that. Is it called, like, Dub Movies or something like that? Or it's, like, an app where, like, it's, like, music and, like, it dubs over your own voice. And, like, you see all these little, like, 15-second clips of, like, the cast being together and, like, singing songs and having fun behind the scenes. They're so funny. And you get the impression it's, like, a real, like, team effort. Like, everyone's there to spend time as part of a family. And that's a kind of tired cliche that you see on the behind the scenes things, like, oh, it's just like a family reunion. But it feels like that, and it feels more like it's like going to scout camp or something every year. Like, it's an adventure for them, as opposed to perhaps just like catching up over some beers.
Right. And like I said, the casting was amazing. Everyone nails their role. I mean, Quinto just manages to get Spock down to a T. The other one I was really impressed with, and, you know, Urban does a great job of channeling DeForest Kelly, but someone who I think even had a bigger challenge of trying not to imitate their predecessor was Chris Pine. Yeah. Because Shatner's so easily imitatable. I mean, he's become a parody at this point. So I was wondering how his Kirk would come across. And what I liked about him was that he had the swagger and the gung-ho-ness of Shatner without ever doing a Shatner imitation. And I thought he walked that line pretty brilliantly.
Yeah, I think he had this harder position in a way, because, like, with William Shatner, I think I've recently just finished a rewatch of the original series movies up into building up to Star Trek Beyond, and I think William Shatner is very underappreciated. When he's good, he's great in these movies like Voyage Home, Star Trek 6, 2, 3, as we've discussed before. But with, like, he has a style which can be a bit not for everyone. And it could be so easy for people like Chris Pine to fall into that trap of being William Shatner. But instead, he kind of focuses on the spirit of Captain Kirk. Like, what is it like to be a captain of an Enterprise? And he really embraces that. He doesn't need to be William Shatner being Captain Kirk. He just needs to be Chris Pine being Captain Kirk. And that's fine by me.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what he did. Now, there was a couple points where I thought that he did evoke Shatner more directly, but that was because I think that's what they were going for. I'm thinking specifically of, like, the way he acts during the Kobayashi Maru scene.
Yeah, like Chunk eating on that apple.
And that scene of cockiness, that is Shatner.
Definitely.
But he did such a great job. And last but not least, when I saw the film, I never realized how much I had missed and how much that he was still able to maintain the character, how much I had missed Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
But I loved the way that Leonard Nimoy was used in the film and how his version of Spock was truly honored.
Definitely. I kind of wish he didn't appear again in Star Trek Into Darkness, because it's almost a perfect ending to Spock, that thrusters on full, and it's such a wonderful performance, a bit of melancholy, that regret that things didn't, like, you always have this image at the end of Star Trek VI, they go off and sail off into the sunset, but reality wasn't really like that, as we saw in Generations and Relics and with this, where life didn't end necessarily happy for our heroes. And it was a lovely moment where the baton was really passed in such a classy and subtle way between Quinto and Nimoy at the end. And I kind of just wish that was the end, that was the final beat, as opposed to perhaps coming back for just that one scene that adds very little else, but going, oh, there's Nimoy.
I don't hate that scene in Into Darkness, but I agree with you that they should have left him alone after 2009.
Yeah.
But so the film comes out, is a huge hit. And I just remember feeling so energized that, you know, there's so many ways we can go now, because with the alternate reality storyline, we don't have to be beholden to anything. And I remember thinking how creatively freeing that was.
Yeah.
And I remember not being able to wait until the next movie came out. And it took 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
because everybody was busy doing other things.
That's what you get when you have a successful cast that aren't just going to be starring in Star Trek movies. Like, guys, any chance of a Star Trek movie? I could do with a wee paycheck here. Like, these are successful actors that they aren't just like kicking around the convention circuit waiting for a call from Paramount Studios. They're starring in some of the biggest movies and doing their own projects. It's a logistical challenge.
And directing, I mean, J.J. Abrams had gone on to do other things. He did Super 8 in between the two Star Trek films. Mm-hmm. But it, finally, in 2012, they said that they were going to start filming the next one. And I remember the build-up to it. It was so exciting. And then, of course, the cast was coming back, so we didn't have any major casting news until we got word that Benedict Cumberbatch was going to be in it. And
oh, I don't know if you can hear that on the speaker there, but my heart's just started racing a bit faster at the thought of Cumberbatch.
See, that must be, like, again, it was a niche thing because I didn't know who that was.
Oh, yeah, I knew who he was.
I wasn't watching Sherlock at the time.
Yeah, like, I'd been a Cumberbatch fan for quite a while. My first time really getting to know him was in Atonement. He is one of my favourite lines, and he's a horrible character in that. So when he was cast, because I remember, like, there was talk that it was Benicio Del Toro, or was it Del Toro? Who was it?
It was Del Toro.
Yeah, it was Del Toro. Was. Yeah, he was linked with being cast. I thought, wow, that's a hell of a coup. And then when it was Cumberbatch, I was like, oh my god! It was like all my fandoms had just clashed in. Like, I love Cumberbatch. I love Star Trek. Cumberbatch is going to be in Star Trek. I remember texting my friend that was a huge, huge fan of Cumberbatch. They're like, oh my god, he's going to be in Star Trek Into Darkness. Oh my god, who's he going to play? I was so jacked for that.
Yeah. But we knew he was playing the villain, and so when the filming wrapped and we saw the first trailer with his voice on it, I remember thinking, well, this guy's got a great voice. I think he's going to make a fantastic villain. But they kept I remember the whole lead up to it, and of course you probably remember this too. They kept hiding who he was going to be. They didn't say who he was. He was just cast as quote unquote the villain.
And that caused me a hell of a lot of stress. I always remember, like almost early doors, it was, this guy's going to be Khan. And they would say, no, it's John Harrison. And I was really, like, vehemently against the idea that it could be Khan. I was like, it's not going to be Khan. It'll probably be Gary Mitchell, something like that. And, like, I remember when one of the first images leaked where it was Cumberbatch in a Starfleet uniform, I was like, see, that's not Khan. And I always remember, Noel Clark, he's at the beginning of Star Trek Into Darkness. He's the guy who commits suicide. Me and a friend of the show, Annika, were at, like, a comic convention, and we had, like, VIP seats, so we had really good seats, and he was sat right in front of us, and I knew he'd been just cast in Star Trek Into Darkness, and I was like to her, I was like, do you think I should ask him, like, that it's definitely not Khan? Like, I was so anxious, I was like, I just need it to be put to bed, it's definitely not Khan, and I was just looking at him, just like, oh, should I ask, like, should I just tap him on the shoulder, like, between a break and a panel, go, excuse me, Mr. Clark, just to ask you about Star Trek Into Darkness, it's definitely not Khan, is it? But I thought better of it and decided not to bother this actor.
Not to mention the fact that he's probably under contract.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I thought, like, if he said, oh, I can't tell you, he was like, I promise I won't tell anyone, I promise. But I opted not to, and even up until, like, opening night, I refused to believe it was going to be Khan. That was a hell of a denial I was in.
Right, that was a hell of a denial, but they kept that denial right up until the end, and I remember I wasn't as fervently checking online buzz at the time, because I'm sure that if I had checked it, I would have been spoiled, because something like that, when it's released, it's all over the internet. But they kept it in check for a long, long time, and then when I finally went to go see it, I remember going to see it with, again, some friends of mine. And, I walked out of the film still liking it. I mean, like, I wasn't as, I don't know if I could say I was as fervently jazzed as I was walking out of 2009, but I remember thinking that was a really fun follow-up.
I was torn. I went to see it
I remember you went on a journey with this film.
Yeah, like, I remembered, like, I was going to see, like, a performer on, I think it was like a Wednesday night, and then they were announced, like, I was like, oh yeah, like, the performer finished like 10 o'clock, and hopefully like Star Trek Into Darkness will be like a midnight release and we can go along and see it afterwards. But then they announced that they were doing like a Star Trek and Into Darkness IMAX double bill, and I didn't get the chance to see Star Trek 09 in IMAX. So I was like, oh, god damn it, I'm not going to be able to do all three things. So I remember calling up the theater and went, can I move my tickets to another night? And I had to pay like a small fee, and that was fine. Then I got the tickets to go see the double bill, and I was blown away by seeing 09 in IMAX. The Kelvin stuff just looked incredible. And then I remember sitting through Into Darkness, and like I've said it many times on this show, that seeing a big blockbuster movie, sometimes you do need that second time to just get rid of your baggage and all that sort of stuff. And I was sitting watching it, and the moment where he turns around, my name is Khan, and I was like, oh no, why? And you know, I was really frustrated, and even now I still wish it wasn't Khan. Maybe it was just someone else from the tube, but like, we're not gonna bore everyone with this tired old debate, and everyone knows some of the flaws of this film. And I watched it and I was like, ugh. And then there was the Khan bit, and I was like, ugh, you know. And then I came out of it, and I remember doing a podcast at the time with a bunch of guys, and
yeah, as I was gonna say, you did the what was then the Treknobabble podcast, yeah, on Trekmate. And I remember, like, because I remember your tune being quite different. You weren't so hot on the film when you did that podcast.
No.
And then I remember you, because I followed you on Twitter back then.
Yeah,
at that
that's
point.
Right, yeah.
And then I remember, like, your tune suddenly changed. And I was like, well, that's good, but, like, yeah, when did that happen?
Like, it's the same with these things that I'd put so much pressure on it. Like, I don't want it to be Khan. I don't want it to Khan. It's not going to be Khan. It's not going to be Khan. People are probably telling you, it's going to be Khan. It's like, no, it's not going to be Khan. And I think sometimes you need to go in like you need to get over yourself sometimes going into films that, like, I watched it and I totally agree. It's like very, there's a lot of flaws in that film.
I was very high on the film at the time, but mm-hmm. I think part of it was because when the film came out, it got such backlash from fans. And I was so astounded that, you know, it was later that summer that it was voted as the worst Star Trek movie at the convention.
Yeah,
I was like, that's crap. You
that's
know,
why
I know
Tristan
Riddell
should not be allowed to vote.
That's why, yeah, exactly, right? Because, I mean, I can't cuss on this show, but that I was so livid when stuff like that came out. Because
Simon Pegg certainly was.
Well, and I don't blame him, because, yeah, I mean, if you think
didn't
that
Galaxy
that's the
Quest come above Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, well, that's how you know that poll means nothing,
yeah,
because Galaxy Quest is not a Star Trek film.
No,
it's a parody.
But, like, the thing is,
but
like,
when I read stuff like that, I was like, these people need to be forced to sit through Five and,
yeah,
Insurrection,
exactly,
and Nemesis,
like,
and all those other things.
Like, the film is flawed. Like, you cannot get,
yes,
away from that. And like
looking, my point was, looking back on it now 3 years later and having watched it yesterday,
yeah,
now I can see that, yes, it is much more narratively flawed than 09 was,
yeah,
and there are so many things that I would change, mm-hmm, about it, but I still don't think it's the worst film.
Oh,
in the
god,
series,
no,
not
I'd,
by
I'd
a long
put it in
shot.
My like top half for sure. That,
yeah,
for the movie falls apart in 3 points, and I don't think it's so bad. Like, it takes on water. It's like breaching a hull. Okay, I don't like that it's Khan. Okay, so we've taken on some water there. I don't like the Khan bit. Don't like that. I don't like the mirroring part. And then I don't like that it descends into a fist fight between Spock and Khan on a bin barge.
See, that I didn't mind, only because I thought, well, if you're going to have someone do a hand-to-hand fight with Khan, we've already seen Kirk do it, and that's a hopelessly outmatched,
yeah,
match that he has to cheat at to win. So the novelty of having an enhanced human versus a Vulcan who has, you know, what, 3 or 4 times the strength of a human, I thought, well, that's at least an interesting match.
Hmm. Yeah, like, for me, it's flawed, but like, there's so much that I enjoy in the movie, and we spoke about what we've enjoyed before really with it, and like, there's a lot I like about it. I really think that it's an like, the idea of a Star Trek movie taking place over like 2 days is really pretty awesome, and I think there's some really fantastic scenes in there, some really great character work. I think the stuff with Kirk dealing with his anger about like seeing his mentor die is incredibly relevant, that we see what's going on with the world just now, and how many times do we see something where someone strikes us where we, you know, live, and we decide that, right, I'm going after them. Ration goes out the window and you go in all guns blazing. This movie shows stop and think. It has an important message, and people forget about that powerful message and relevant message when they're going on about some bits that really are flawed, but does it really detract so much from what else is going on in the movie? No.
Right. And I thought that, you know, especially that Pike's death scene is incredibly emotional. Dare I say one of the more emotional parts of the series.
Oh, yeah. Like, I didn't see that bit coming. I thought it was an excellent moment.
The one part I will say, I mean, because people have, if you've listened to me for the last 3 years since this movie came out, I've done my level best to defend it, and sometimes I maybe even overcompensating. But I will say the one part of the film that I always kind of like, that didn't need to be the way that it happened, and it's such an easy fix too, was the whole the trouble scene.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you don't remember, it's when Kirk comes into sick bay and he's convincing Khan to go on the space jump with him, which is a very good scene, and I like the dialogue between them. And then all of a sudden, like, we pause from that conversation, so Kirk say, Bones, what are you doing with that tribble? And we had to get the explanation of Khan's blood and all that stuff. And then we jump back to the Khan and Kirk dialogue, and I'm like, it's so super awkward. And the thing that I find, why I find that frustrating more than some of the other things, is because that's such an easy fix.
Yeah.
Because earlier in the movie, McCoy takes the blood sample from Khan,
mm-hmm,
when he's in the brig. And then in a later scene, McCoy and Carol Marcus and Kirk are in the sick bay talking about the torpedo with the body inside it.
Yeah.
So the easy fix is to put that conversation about the tribble into that scene and set it up in that scene versus interrupting a conversation in the other scene. You see what I'm talking,
yeah,
about? Like, have McCoy in that scene say, oh, by the way, I've been analyzing that blood sample and have noticed that it has some very strange properties. I'm going to test it on this dead tribble.
Yeah, like, the film broadly works really well. That it's an exciting movie. It's faster and more intense. There's so much really good stuff going on broadly. It just kind of falls apart, like, in just the little parts where if you stop and think, kind of go, oh, that kind of doesn't make sense. Oh, that's a bit silly. Like, why is he just looking at her in the underwear? It's just little moments where it kind of just trips over itself, and sometimes that can affect the momentum of watching a movie like that, where you're thinking, oh, I'm enjoying this. Wait, what was that? Oh, then you get back into it, and then a little thing happens here and there. Whereas if you, with the repeated viewings and everything like that, that's when you kind of get over it. When you're watching it as a bit more of a regular thing, you don't get so bogged down in, I haven't watched this movie in a while, and oh yeah, I remember this bit here. Like, if you watch a bit more frequently, it's just that you treat it a bit more normally, I think, than watching it every once in a while, but under a huge microscope.
Right. It's a movie that I guess people can see as death by a thousand paper cuts. But like I said, I think that my reaction to the film at the time was maybe a little bit more positive than it should have been, simply because it was being so torn apart.
Mm-hmm.
And
but who's tearing it apart, though, Matt. It was Star Trek fans. It wasn't the wider public. And in a way, that's pretty good, I think.
It is pretty good. But it just so happened that I was getting the brunt of it, because most of the people that I follow on Twitter, and you as well, yeah, are Star Trek fans. So I was seeing a lot of it constantly, daily. And it just felt, it got to a point where I felt it was unwarranted.
It just gets into an echo chamber, and I think that's a problem that happens a lot with sci-fi and franchise movies, that people just, they take a point and then they kick it to death for months and months and months, as opposed to sometimes just going, you know what? I've got flaws with it, and then moving on with it. Like, people are still going on about things from years ago, where it's like, can we get over it already and, like, move on? Like, I don't mind if someone doesn't like something, but if you don't like something, people don't need to hear about it every day of the week.
That's the thing, right, is that I think what frustrated me is that we've been hearing this for 3 constant years.
Oh, yeah.
And it put, you know, in the run-up to Star Trek Beyond, I felt that the level of scrutiny and skepticism and general negativity was so blown out of proportion. Like, I mean, because at the end of the day, most people, including people who are paid to see and review movies liked Into Darkness. And Into Darkness was a financial success and a critical success for the most part. So, you know, the level of hatred and scrutiny over the next project was so that you would think it was like, I mean, I understand the level of scrutiny that something like Batman v Superman went under because Man of Steel was terrible. And it was critically terrible, too. Yeah. But, I mean, this was the first time where, like, something was rated well, reviewed well, received mostly well, and everyone's treating it like it was a failure.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, movies... I get, like, that sometimes a movie can be a personal failure. Like, I watched movies and I thought, I think that's a failure because it's failed to work for me. But sometimes, like, that's... You've got to view it as a broader thing, that Star Trek Into Darkness made a lot of money, and I spoke about it before. I saw it with a live audience with the score, and it killed as a live experience, and, you know... And so it is a success. As much as it may be a failure in the eyes of some, the movie is a success. That's undeniable. And the fact that we've got another movie coming for it, like, we only need to look, as you say, only need to look back 10 years ago to think, we've seen failures and disasters in Star Trek. Into Darkness definitely wasn't one of them.
No, I mean, because, like, for me, Star Trek really falls apart when either the story is ludicrous or... My biggest problem with something like Five or Nemesis is that the characters aren't behaving like the characters.
Yeah.
Where I didn't really have that problem in Into Darkness. I know a lot of people, like, you know, you mentioned the Spock and Khan brawl, and people thought that Spock was way too emotional, but I was just like, it's a different Spock, and this is a Spock who's lost his planet, and we've already seen from the previous film is going to be more emotional in this timeline because of the circumstances of his life. Mm-hmm. So that never bothered me. But for, you know, it's neither here nor there. Star Trek Into Darkness has passed. And what I'm hoping is that, you know, but beyond, even if it doesn't get the same, you know, incredibly high Rotten Tomatoes score that the 2009 film got, that at least, and this is the impression that I'm getting from some of the early reviews, it's going to fall easier on fans than Into Darkness did. I know it's a movie made for more than just the fans, but it would be nice to not have to repeat the summer of 2013 over again in terms of animosity.
Yeah, exactly. We just want to all get along. We're one big happy fleet, as Khan said in Wrath of Khan. Like, it's always good to get dissent and different opinions, and if people don't like it, that's fine. If people love it and it's not that great, that's fine as well. But just sometimes I think fandom really needs to just take a break. That we know Into Darkness has flaws, but we don't need to hear the same arguments each and every week for 3 years. It just sometimes wears you down a little bit, I think, with things. And that's why I like the Nerd Party philosophy that you and Tristan started off with. Let's be positive. We can talk about flaws and everything, but let's try and be positive and, you know, have a good approach to things, as opposed to just coming on here and going, that was rubbish, this was rubbish, and, you know, well, that would be difficult if we did a Batman v Superman podcast, but, you know, we do our best.
But I mean, we were talking about a film that had already come out, and we were able to analyze it. Mm-hmm. Here, it's all, you know, the internet age of pre-hatred is just kind of silly, and it makes things not fun.
Yeah.
Because I mean, looking forward to films used to be fun, and that's what we try to do here at the Nerd Party.
Exactly. And, you know, me and Matt have spoken, and we're not gonna wait 2 weeks to do another bonus episode. We're going to bring out a bonus episode in the after we've seen Into Darkness. So hopefully we'll have something out to you in the coming days after Into Darkness. Because I don't know about you, Matt, but I cannot wait for Thursday night.
Me neither. And I hope, I hope the buzz holds, because so far so good. And I've not been one that's hated the trailers. I mean, no. I thought that the first one was certainly different,
yeah,
and maybe not the best trailer to start off on, but, you know, whatever. And then that second trailer came out, I was I was pretty confident that it was going to be at least an okay film. At worst, it's going to be an okay film.
How are you, seeing it on Thursday night? Are you seeing it as a triple bill or IMAX? How are you seeing
it? I wish I could, because if listeners don't know, this is my last day of work, last week of work, and because of the agency that I work for, I can't take any time off. So I don't know if I can do my day before, because I can't be in work late the next day. Ooh. So I may have to wait until Friday night to see.
Ooh, my thoughts are going to be with you. That's going to be a stressful 24 hours for you.
Yeah, I know. But at least, you know, I'm hoping that there's some light at the end of the tunnel. How are you going to see it?
I'm seeing it as a triple bill on Thursday. I'm going along with my girlfriend, Lauren. She's a huge Trekkie. So she's coming along. And I'm going along with two people that are only fans of the Kelvin movies. That's like the Star Trek they know. So they wanted to come along to the triple bill. So in a way, J.J. Abrams and their team have successfully appealed to non-fans, which is great. And as I was saying to Matt earlier on air, I actually had the privilege of meeting Idris Elba at a Star Trek Beyond event a few days ago when I was in London. There was a Star Trek Beyond mural going up, and Idris Elba came along to sign it. And I found out it was like a mile away from my hotel, and that he was doing this sign. And I was like, oh my God. So I ran from this hotel and I met Idris Elba, and I was like a sweaty mess when I met him. But, you know, I took it as a good sign that I met this guy, and I was like, oh man, I didn't expect to get this. So hopefully that's the sign of a good luck to come with this movie.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'll be looking forward to hearing from you on Thursday, because, I mean, I get nervous waiting to hear about the critical reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, but somehow I get even more nervous hearing back from you, because, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes people can think what they want to think, but you and I are much more like-minded.
Of course. Well,
if you like or hate something, yeah, like that's gonna ride heavily on my opinion.
I've got to see it. Like, obviously, I'll come out of it about like 3 a.m. and then I've got to get like a wisdom tooth operated on and removed like 10 in the morning on Friday. So I'll be in a bit of pain on Friday. So I figured like I'm just gonna spend the day, maybe see a double bill of Into Darkness on Star Trek Beyond on Friday, try and distract from the agony that will be going on in my mouth. So I'm hopefully see it a few times before we can put this podcast together.
Right, but hopefully it turns out well. We're certainly looking forward to it. But this was a fun trip down memory lane of looking back on the two previous films, and hopefully it's one of those trilogies where, you know, all three of the films are solid, if not great, entries in the franchise.
Let's hope so.
So Lee, if people want to follow you and possibly watch you as you attend the Star Trek triple bill, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me at my local Cineworld if you're wanting to really stalk me, or you can find me in a much safer distance at Lee_Nostromo on Twitter. What about you, Matt? Where can people find you?
And you can find me at mhansen0207, hansen.
And obviously you can follow us on the Facebook page, Facebook/The Nerd Party. We're getting a lot of love on there just now. So if you're looking forward to this movie, let us know on there. And we've got our Twitter page, at @joinnerdparty. So let us know what you're thinking about this coming movie. Are you going along? Are you doing a fan event? Let us know what you're doing, because I'm off to watch Generations tonight. I've got a few movies left to go before my rewatch is done. So that's where I'm heading next.
Right, and don't forget to listen to the other podcasts here on The Nerd Party. Tristan and I do The Senate Floor, which is the main body of this show. He and his wife also do Nerd Nuptial, which this will be interestingly, because I believe that they're going to do a Star Trek Beyond review after this week. So, and there, you know, Tristan had a much lower opinion of Into Darkness than we did.
We can't all be perfect like us.
No, we can't all be perfect. But so it'll be interesting. You'll get a review from the skeptics, let's say, and you'll get a review from us, the hopefuls.
Sounds good.
So we'll see if we can agree on this one.
And you will not get any Star Trek chat whatsoever is on a Star Wars podcast, Aggressive Negotiations with Matt and John, where I think they're contractually obliged never to discuss Star Trek. So,
although that contract has become a lot more blurred since J.J. Abrams got involved in both.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm sure they'll be struggling perhaps on their show. So maybe they'll talk about Jar Jar Binks or something like that instead. So, I look forward to finding out.
Yes. So thank you so much for joining us for this retrospective on the two Kelvin movies. Looking very much forward to Beyond, so until then, set a course for Star Trek Beyond.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.